Danielle Moinodine's debut, In Other Rooms, Other Wonders, is a collection of related stories about an aging landowner, his servants, managers, and extended family. Their interwoven lives are complicated by wealth and status, gender and ambition, love and deceit. The stories take place in rural Pakistan, a place very distinct from the Pakistan we read about in the front pages of the New York Times. Here, all politics are local, all dangers familial, and nothing is as devastating as love. The book is published by Norton, and I'm very pleased that it brings Danielle Moinodine here to the show today. Hi.
Hello.
So where did you grow up? Because you've lived in the United States a lot, haven't you?
I've kind of bounced back and forth. I was lived in Pakistan in Lahore until I was 13, and then went off to boarding school into college, and then went back for a number of years.
But you went to an American school in Lahore.
Yeah, I went to the American school. But by the time I went there, the Americans had all sort of abandoned what was then also a sinking ship. So there were a lot of Pakistanis in it, actually.
And how did you think of yourself culturally when you were growing up?
I think probably more Pakistani than American. Although, at that age, I suppose one doesn't think of oneself one way or another. It's just you are who you are.
And then you came to the U.S.?
Then I came to the U.S. And
how old were you?
I was 13 and went through this sort of massive culture shock where I wore sort of bell-bottom jeans and everybody else had stovepipes and this kind of thing. So there was certainly a big adjustment there. And then by the time I went to college, I'd sort of worked it out somewhat and probably there fit in better than I have either before or after.
At that point, did you assume that you would live in the United States the rest of your life, or did you know that you would return to Pakistan?
Well, you see, I was sort of one of those, like so many people who sort of at the age of 17 looks in the mirror and suddenly finds that staring back at them is a poet. And so I think that I always thought that I would go back to Pakistan just because it seemed that it would be an ideal place to work, and that living in America, I would have to sort of have a career, whereas in Pakistan I could go and live on this farm.
This is your father's farm.
This is my father's farm. And right, even when I was 17 or 18 or 19, I was aware that the situation on the farm was very bad and that therefore it would be necessary for either me or my brother to go back and take care of it.
The farm is in the Punjab?
It's in the southern Punjab, yeah, that's right.
Which is kind of like the breadbasket of Pakistan and India, isn't it?
The Indian Punjab is quite different. But the southern Punjab is more arid than this. It's not really heartland Punjab. It's more arid, where it's more desert people. There's a lot of these Mahar who are sort of Bedouin. But also recently it's become this sort of hotbed of the Taliban. That's one of the main recruiting grounds. So
they're no longer just on the border with Afghanistan. They've moved into the Punjab?
They have, and especially I think in the southern Punjab, simply because it's a poor area and it's an unsophisticated area, and therefore they find it easy to convince the parents to let them take their kids and put them into these madrasas.
And what condition was your father's business, this farm and lands in?
It was in pretty appalling shape.
What did he want you to do? Did he think that you could put it back into decent shape?
I'm not sure what he thought. I think that, when I came back from America, I was pretty American and I spoke with a twang. And so I think that
he, and you were speaking Punjabi
exactly
with an American accent?
Exactly. So I think he thought it was interesting that I'd chosen this challenge. But I think he wanted it very much. This was a property that had been in our family for a long time, and it was clearly going to be lost to the managers if I didn't do it.
Well, you said you didn't have a telephone. You were passing your time either trying to get it into shape, and then what? Were you already thinking of writing?
Well, I was writing. You see, which is why it worked for me. I have friends who've tried to go and live on their farms, and it hasn't worked, simply because it becomes too oppressive. But for me, every morning I wrote. I was writing poetry at the time, and every morning I got up and wrote poetry till lunch, basically, or wrote either poetry or notes for poems or letters. But I had this whole other life, so that when I went out into the fields and went and met my managers, I spent a lot of time in the office going over books and so on. I had this other life, and therefore, when I felt threatened by them, I could retreat into that other place, which was my own and which was much more secure, and which sort of suggested to me the possibility of a life elsewhere.
What were you writing, in English, Punjabi?
No, entirely in English. I've never written in Urdu or Punjabi.
So that also meant another life, because you were talking to people in Punjabi or Urdu, and then you could go off and write in English for a private thing.
That's exactly right. And what's interesting about it is that, you know, when you speak a language, you're a person in that language. And I'm a very different person in Urdu and in Punjabi and in English. And so when I went off and wrote in English, I was being able to inhabit that other personality.
But you were writing about an area where everyone spoke Punjabi. So did this give you a certain amount of distance, a certain amount of perspective that you might not have had otherwise?
Well, partly. But you know, poetry is less about something, you know, unlike fiction, you know. And I was sort of more of a lyric poet, and therefore the poems were not so grounded. And that was another form of escape, or not escape, but of an alternative place to live in.
From these stories, I get the feeling that it isn't so easy even for an insider to figure out what's going on. And when you returned to Pakistan with your twang, had you become a total outsider by that time?
Yeah, completely. It was, and it was quite funny because the managers of the farm had become independently very powerful. One of them actually had managed to become a member of parliament, and these guys very much thought that, you know, I would be there for about one inning and I'd be out and that would be the end of me. They were planning to chuck me out pretty quickly
and trying to take advantage of you in
every possible way, and they succeeded beautifully. And I mean, the humiliations that I suffered in the first couple of years were pretty appalling, because nobody would listen to me, and no, you know, the government officials were all on their side, and everybody sort of, I always saw this smirk on their faces.
Well, they were on their side for a number of reasons, probably. One, because according to your stories anyway, justice seems very personal. The authorities mostly corrupt.
Yeah.
And that was something that you had to contend with. You probably were surprised coming from the United States, where only some authorities are corrupt.
Exactly. Only at the higher levels in America. No, but there's quite a funny thing where, when I first arrived, my father had no idea how much land we owned or where the land we owned was, or he'd never collected that information. And I went to the local government authorities and said, could you tell me where my land is? And they sort of looked at me and said, in a very snooty way, well, you see, all those records have been destroyed, but perhaps you could ask your managers.
Which, of course, was not going to happen. They were going to claim it all for themselves.
Exactly, exactly.
My guest is Danielle Mouinadine, whose first collection of short stories, published by Norton, is In Other Rooms, Other Wonders. Did your father realize the dilemma that he was putting you in?
Yes and no. I mean, I think he took the view that he took a much more sort of light view of this whole thing. And I think there was a farming generally, and his view was, you know, you can get along, you can sort of scrape along. He didn't really understand that the situation had changed and that scraping along no longer worked.
But I wonder when you realized that you were discovering some pretty good material if you wanted to write about things.
I think what happened is that because I had neither telephone nor, of course, internet, I wrote letters all the time, and I started writing, you know, I became more and more sort of a storyteller as I realized that I had a girlfriend in America and I was sort of seducing her with my letters and my mother and my friends, and so.
But you were away for a fairly long time, weren't you?
Yes, but I used to go back, you know, I would go back for a month here and a month there.
And then you came back to go to law school.
Yeah, and then I was there for 7 years and then came back and went to law school and just had this wonderful other life after law school.
And where did you think that you would settle permanently, the U.S. or Pakistan?
Well, my thought was to do humanitarian work, so I thought I would get this. You know, I mean, because I thought, well, I can live in Pakistan, but I can live in the cities and go back to the farm and still manage both. So I thought at law school I did a lot of humanitarian work, you know, studied it, and thought to go back.
Now, many of these stories are told from the point of view of the servants and the managers. So, because you were trying to understand what was happening between you and them, often why it was so antagonistic?
Well, I mean, it wasn't really conscious. And the second is that when I was living that life, I was the only person the only sort of owner person. The stories that I observed were all lived through the lives of the you know, the servants and the managers and so on. So, either I was going to write my own story, which I was not really interested in doing at that point, or I was going to write theirs.
Well, but you do it with quite a bit of empathy. Although it's also can be rather funny, like the opening to your story, Nawabdin Electrician. It's he flourished on a signature capability, which was that he could cheat the electric company, and this trick guaranteed his employment. So cheating is an admired ability?
No, definitely. I think even in America sometimes.
There are any number of stories, as I said, from the viewpoints of the servants and the managers, but there are some that seem to be pretty autobiographical, or am I just making assumptions I shouldn't make?
No, I don't think that that's true, because I don't think there's any character in these stories who's really very much like me. You know, and I think that the people assume that I've lived sort of a life among the elite, which is not really true. I mean, you know, I've observed all these. I've lived in all of these places.
So the upper class characters aren't you any more than the lower class characters?
Not really. No, I don't think so. I mean, of course, some of the externals of their life resemble mine more, perhaps.
It must have been odd, because this is to go back there, because this is almost a feudal society, isn't it?
It is a feudal society, and yeah, it was kind of it was very disorienting having come from college, where I was very much sort of have a liberal mindset.
Many of the stories are told about or by women. Did you feel particular empathy for the plight of the women you saw?
I don't think it was that conscious. I think that, you know, like most men, I mean, the people I've been closest to are women, my mother and my girlfriend or wife. But I think it just, you know, I wrote the stories that interested me, and those were the stories that seemed, in a way, most intriguing, simply because these were disempowered characters who used very complicated means to empower themselves.
Including bargaining sex for power.
Of course.
Does that work well for them?
It does and it doesn't. I mean, just as it does and it doesn't here, it works, it's sometimes effective, but it's also demeaning.
Well, it's not just sex, but there's also class. That one of the stories provide the main character seems to have generally loved the girl he got involved with, but in the end won't provide for her, feels compromised by being involved with a woman of her status.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Pakistan is very much a class society. People are much, much more aware of class than they are here. And also it's a much more desperate society. People are trying very hard to climb.
Do you think that this book will ever be published in Pakistan?
Well, it's being distributed in Pakistan by my Indian and my English publishers, but in English, and that will therefore only be read by, you know, a limited number of people. And I think there's some question whether or not I really want it to be published in Urdu or Punjabi.
And now, these are all short stories. Are you going to stick to this format?
No, I'm working on a novel now, so I'm switching gears.
My guest, Danial Muinuddin, was brought up in Lahore and Elroy, Wisconsin. His stories have appeared in The New Yorker, Granta, Zoetrope, The Best American Short Stories, 2008. And a collection is called In Other Rooms, Other Wonders, published by Norton. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.